Kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. I am your host, Lotta Dan, otherwise known as Mrs. D. I am the community manager and content creator here at Living Sober. And today, this is a treat. I am joined by Di Henwood. Now, Di, for those of you who don't know, he is an award-winning comedian, he's an actor, he's a TV host and presenter, he's a husband, he's a father. And he is sober. Welcome, Di.
Yes. Oh, thanks so much. Kia ora all. No, thanks so much for having me on. I was just, when you invited me, I was sort of looking at how long I'd been sober for, and it was quite refreshing actually having to look that up, because for so long I went through every day sort of counting the length, and I've been almost 2.5 years now. So
Ooh.
it's been a journey not without struggle at all, but with a lot of struggle, but so rewarding and so lovely to chat to you.
So why did you quit drinking, Di? What was happening?
Well, sort of a brief, in a nutshell, when I was young, I used to, this sort of precursor to alcohol, I used to go to Japan quite a lot with my dad. He toured Phantom of the Opera around Japan. And one of the actors in the show was a Buddhist monk, and she taught me how to do meditation, and I just loved meditation, and that was
Wow.
became and I went to a monastery and learned proper sort of seated Zazen meditation and all this, and then that completely fell by the wayside. I became a comedian. I traveled the world drinking and having a good and a bad time in equal measures.
We'd be silly
And
to deny the good times. I
oh
mean, it's
yeah,
true, isn't it? Yeah.
I had great times. I created some great content when I was drinking, but drinking went from fun to it started becoming an issue for me, quite a serious issue. And I met my partner, who is now my wife, in sort of 2006. And we drank a lot together, but then I started drinking too much, and I was a good drunk. In terms of the fact that I wasn't abusive, violent, I didn't rip into people and all that carry on,
Not a lot of drama.
which probably served others good, but not myself, because it meant my point of needing to stop probably got pushed out a bit. However, I caused my wife a lot of pain through my drinking, through worry, through stress, through going away on tours and coming back, and she knew I'd still be half sozzled because I caught an early flight and I was still half sozzled, or I'd had a couple of beers at the Cory Lounge before I got on the plane. And she had voiced that to me a few times, and I'd said, "No, nah, I don't have a drinking problem. This is who I am. I'm known as the pissed comedian guy." And but then it started to get through. She stuck by me. She was an amazing support network. And then this was early days for me, was trying to find communities. Like Living Sober is such an awesome community. The only one that was sort of around at this time was Hello Sunday Morning,
Yeah.
which Chris Rain, I believe his name is. I got in touch with him. I sort of really launched into that. The idea behind that was sort of more short-term things, take 3 months off, reassociate with alcohol. So I started getting into this pattern of take 3 months off, reset. I'll come back all guns blazing as this guy who can just have a beer and all that.
Moderate.
Moderate, then sure, I'd moderate for 2 weeks, and then by the time a month had gone by, I'm back at square one. But this time, it has so much added anxiety and pressure on me. Because one, I've admitted to myself internally I have a drinking problem. So not only am I just being loose and drinking, I am realizing that I need to stop. And so then I do another 3 months, then I get to a lot better place with drinking. I was not a spirits person. I was a beer guy, so, and I would hold off and so forth. And I had kids and got married. So things just naturally tampered down because I wasn't going out all night. I wasn't partying like I was. But I'd still have couch parties where I'd drink. Often I would be, the next day, I would be anxious. And it wouldn't be after a particularly big session, but it would be I would drink more than I had planned to drink. So I'd let myself down. I still had drunk enough to have a hangover.
It's that internal angst, isn't it? That internal dialogue, that knowing it's a problem and yet doing it, and it's confusing, it's debilitating, it's you're disappointing yourself, you've got no one else to blame. It's a very difficult place to be in.
Oh, it is. And no one should think it is easy or like just, oh, you should have just not drunk. But so much in those early days, so much is about breaking a habit as well. I must say I'm talking from a point of someone who was not medically addicted to alcohol in terms of the fact that I could stop without causing myself causing too much stress to the body. So of course I have known people and friends who just stopping would be a bad idea.
They need to have a managed withdrawal.
You really do need to work with health professionals and so forth. But once I'd sort of admitted it to myself, and then it became the best part of 10 years getting fully sober for me.
Right.
And then I just got to this crossroads where there's a quote which I'll paraphrase, which is that thing of when I'm enjoying it, I'm not controlling it. And when I'm controlling it, I'm not enjoying it. And that's where I was with alcohol. So I was never getting, if I was going out and I was, okay, I'm going to drink tonight, but I'm not getting pissed. So I'm having 3 beers. Then I'm just controlling it and I'm looking at the time and I'm going, right, I'm pacing my beers. And then those nights when I go stuff it, then I'd just go loose. And then I'd get that huge anxiety.
So what was holding you back for 10 years from making that final, I'm not going to have it anymore? Was it a fear of like a life without alcohol? Was it this kind of hope that you could be a moderate drinker? Was it pressure from outside? Was it all of the above?
It was all of the above, really, because I enjoyed drinking. Because I hadn't had a long enough stint not enjoying, realizing I was the same person without it. I was having worries that I wouldn't be as funny on stage. Being a comic who works live, it's one of the few jobs where you show up and people give you a beer before work. So that was always quite weird. All of my friends are big drinkers. Some can handle it, some can't handle it. And as I've gotten to my 40s, I now realize that everyone either has an issue with booze or knows someone who has an issue with booze. Like pervasive. Mm. And then it finally clicked for me. It was 2019. My father had passed away. I was determined to, I wanted to just go to do his funeral, his wake, sober and just respect him, even though he was a big drinking Welshman, just to respect that. And I was so proud I did, because I really remember his send-off so fondly. Mm. And I have zero regrets, and I knew I turned up and showed up as the son he loved. So I was responsible and could give him a wonderful send-off and sort of facilitate that and be there for my mother, because I was I'm an only child. Mm. But then I went to Japan again. I was working at the Rugby World Cup, and the first night I got there, it was all excitement. We end up at a sort of small 660 concert I'm all, oh, start having some beers. Oh, these taste good. Then all of a sudden, I wake up in my hotel room with a massive hangover. And that actually sparked me into trying to make the decision. I'm a hugely spiritual person on a sort of leaning more towards Eastern philosophies in terms of the fact that I don't believe in a God, but so much as I do believe there is some sort of creator of energy in the universe. And I suppose I love the universe. And all the teachings around Taoism and Buddhism and that I feel really resonate, especially with people who are getting sober, because they're a great way of awakening your soul. Yeah. And so I went, look, I keep doing this meditation, but then boozing, and then boozing stops me meditating. So what am I? I've got to just pick up and shut up. Am I someone who's going to go down a spiritual path and look after myself and my health and be there for my family? Or am I just going to say, stuff it, I'm a dude who drinks. I drink. And I chose that other path. And then over the following month or two, I sort of had a beer here or there. Then I was on a 7 days tour and we'd finished a show and I just had a beer and I just went, this is it, done now.
Really? So it was quite quiet at the end? And
yeah, like it wasn't a give up after
it was a big build up. Years of building up and having an internal dialogue and trying different things, but the actual last moment was just a nice quiet moment where you went, this is it.
It was that, and it was also reading my journals, because I journal as much as I can, and I read my journals and I was like, God, these are boring. They're just a dude. They're just a dude talking about giving up booze. Just give up the booze, man. You know, because so many entries were, oh, I drank more than I wanted last night. You know, this is my wife and I had a lovely dinner, but then we had a bit of stupid niggle in the taxi coming home because we'd had too many drinks. And so my wife is 6 months ahead of me on getting sober.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
So she had her own battles with drink, and I think she realized, and I now fully realize, it was so much better for our relationship. And now, I mean, I then in 2020, I got diagnosed with some really serious health stuff, which is still ongoing, which don't really want to publicly go into yet, but I couldn't have dealt with any of that.
Mm.
With alcohol, and I actually think I probably might not be here if I'd been drinking at the time, just because I would have been, hey, it's all, have a few beers, it's all okay, don't worry about that health shit, that'll work itself out, you know. Yeah. The next day bawling your eyes out and, oh, woe is me, you know. So it gave me this even temperament, and it sort of just raised my base level of health to deal with some pretty heavy stuff. So it then just started a snowball. Early days, so hard, so hard, so day to day, reading every book.
And a big part of that, right, is the fact, as you put so well, this culture we live in where it really is everywhere, and especially when you're in the performing arts, touring, being in heightened kind of environments with extroverted people, and alcohol goes hand in hand with that. And you said there was a fear, you know, would I be funny? That, how has that played out? How have you found that the sober die is able to still do all of this sort of outward facing work?
Well, I'm way better at it, to be honest. Like now my material's a lot better. I can develop a show faster because I'll perform. And when I'm working up material, when you're doing open mic nights and you're working up bits, I'll do it. Then instead of drinking at the bar, I'll go home and work on it, and I'll record it and listen to it. And so I'm actually better and I'm more productive with it. And the hardest thing, to be honest, is managing the adrenaline after a show,
Because you're kind of wired.
Yeah, because, and this is where booze being a depressant played its part, was it would wind you down.
Yeah, I find that as well. That's what, actually, I've never actually really thought about this or talked about it much. But when I do something heightened, like a performance thing or a, I'm really heightened for quite a while. And it, if, especially if it's late at night, I cannot sleep.
Oh, yeah, I've been doing a few things with British, in the British time zone. So I'll finish it at 11 or something and then just wired.
I've never thought about that.
So that was then, like, I then lent deeply into meditation, reading stuff, trying to figure out happiness. And once I realized that sort of adage that happiness isn't the absence of problems, happiness is your ability to deal with those problems, that just filled me with power, because I was going, I'm actually always going to have issues.
Yeah.
Like, there's always going to be a problem of, you know, everything's falling down. So I'm, I'm meant to be there, but, oh, shit, I've got to pick my kid up because they're sick at school. And there's always going to be stuff. So it's my ability to just deal with them and, I suppose, learning a bit more about consciousness and how it interacts with your body and all this sort of thing. And one thing I'll tell you I found really hard when I was giving up, and this is one of the few times in history it might be hard to be a 40-year-old white guy, is that all the communities around getting sober, not all of them, and it's changed a lot now, but I'm talking when I was sort of getting trying to get sober over the last 10 years, very much lean towards a yoga female bent. And the ones, it was like whenever I sort of got into a group or so forth, there wasn't a lot of masculinity around getting sober. And so
you're talking about online or in real life?
Oh, online. I didn't do much. And this is just not me judging at all, because I didn't do a lot of research, and I sort of found a few touch points. I talked to a wonderful guy, James Nikise, who's you probably come across in your travels. Oh. And he's a Wellington comedian.
I think I might know. Yeah,
and luckily there was support, and sort of there is a lot of comics who are getting sober, and I sort of...
So you're talking about the need to connect with people that you can relate to, and that for whatever reason, I mean, well, obvious reasons, but it's not putting the yoga women down, but it's just that's not you.
No, but weirdly, it is me. I am a late 30s yoga mum in Lululemon leggings. Yeah. And if you take the beard off, like, because I'm so into, like, yoga, and I do a thing called Qigong, which is sort of like a healing version of Tai Chi. And I loved it, but it also, I just struggled to find a community that clicked with me.
Have you got that now?
Yeah, I do. I do through just, meeting more people who don't drink nowadays.
No, it's funny how, like, it takes time though, right? And we talk about this on the site often, because people, you know, sometimes there's an adjustment, and people are often worried about losing their friends, especially if they're in a big boozy gang. And that's one of the things that can be a barrier to quitting, is I don't want to lose my friends. But yet they're in this dark place. And so we always say to them, look, just hold on, because lovely, authentic, deep relationships will come, but it takes time for them to develop. You can't fast track it. So just try and concentrate on what you're doing for yourself. Grieve if you're losing friends, or maybe those friendships will reshape, but also trust that new people are going to come in that you're going to find and connect with that you wouldn't have when you were still drinking.
Oh, it's so, so true. It's the, it's like not trying to push anything, as Buddhists would say, like the teacher comes along when you are ready, like the friend will come along. I just found I didn't lose friends, I just didn't see them, and the ones who really mattered I did see. So it was just like, yeah, sure, these people who I'd then bump into, I'd still go, hey, and we'd have a good time chatting, but it would be a quick chat on the street.
Yeah, yeah.
My sort of core group of mates, I still catch up with. They still drink, and actually now I've given up, I realise how little they drink.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that amazing?
I always thought they drank the same amount as me, but right. I was like, oh, no, you actually have a couple of beers and then just stop drinking.
Yeah.
So that was a great eye-opener. And then the thing is, for that early stage, going out is really hard.
So hard. Oh, New my God. Zealand, you feel like you've got a big neon sign flashing over your head, sober, you know, and everyone's staring at you, I remember.
New Zealand is like every single thing, basically from 11 in the morning afterwards, is assumed that you'd have a drink at, a beer or a wine. And then the thing I found is also people who serve beer and wine have this huge assumption everyone drinks orange juice.
Oh,
I haven't drunk orange juice since I was at school.
It's actually getting better, Di, because, I mean, I've been 10 years now since I've had a drink. And when I first got sober, any function I went to, the only non-alcoholic offering would be thick, cloying orange juice. Like, who wants to drink that all night at a wedding? Nowadays, you'll more often find some elderflower or something that's a bit more palatable. But I just wanted to ask you, did you get any shit from people for not drinking? Has anyone kind of said, oh, mate, what are you, fucking wowser? You know,
yeah, a lot.
After and how do you deal with that?
I never, the good thing is I never really got it from friends. I got a little bit in the get-go, but then my true friends had actually seen how long I'd struggled to give up alcohol, so they really respected it. And this comes back to the fact that you realise who your true friends are. But so we'd go on tour and there'd always be an expectation or an arrangement with a sponsor or so forth where you'd go out afterwards. So you'd have to go to their venue for an hour or so forth. And it was like, it was always the people that I would never have a drink with would give me shit for it, who'd come up, have a shot. And I'm like, nah, man, and then ripping, you know, don't call you every name under the sun. And it's like, well, I didn't want to have a shot with you even if I was drinking. But in the past, I would have had a shot with them to put up with them. And then I would have had four more and then my tolerance for dickheads suddenly is really high. Instead, I'd just push through that. I'd go and talk to a couple of mates I'd be touring with or a soundie or something. And then I'd bugger off. And I'd go back and do some meditation sort of for a wind down and just not having, for me it was, I had too many spikes and too many troughs.
Yeah.
And life is a bit more boring, but I like the word boring. I like things being, I mean, jeepers, in a world that is drastically unpredictable on every front at the moment, having a bit of normal is good. And like, I really, really feel for anyone, and I have so much support for anyone who is taking the leap into sobriety now, because there are so many triggers out there, just with the news, with COVID, with war, so many triggers to make you go stuff it and grab a drink. But it will pay off. It does.
Hang in there. That's what we're always saying.
Yeah, so you never regret not drinking. So
that's so true. You never wake up going, God, I wish I'd had a drink last night.
Yeah.
Do you ever have cravings anymore? Or do you ever have days where you're like, gee, I wish I could escape? Or is it easier now?
It's what's weird is every time I think it's an event I'll have a craving at, like I'll go to a friend's 40th or something, I suddenly will leave and go, oh, that was easy. You know, I stayed longer than I thought I was going to stay. I didn't feel like having a beer. But then, like, it was last year I probably had my biggest cravings. I have a lot of little passing ones.
Yeah.
Like, I'll put a barbecue on and be, oh, I'd love a beer. But then
you can kind of bat that away pretty quick.
Yeah, and that'll just pass through. But then last year my son and I were doing a road trip down to Wellington, and we were staying at Wairaki Resort just outside of Taupo there. And I just I'd love a few beers. And then I was just like, no. And then we got into the room and it was awesome because the room didn't have a mini bar. So there wasn't the barrier to a craving had been raised. And then I was driving, and we're driving to a pool, and I was wondering if there's a liquor store around here, I might get a beer. And then I was in that internal thing of, what are you doing, man? It's been like this time it would have been almost 2 years.
What was that about, do you think? Was it, so you were on a road trip with your son, was it?
Yeah, so there was nothing.
Was it what was going on for you emotionally? Like, for me, if ever I'm really feeling like that, I can usually, if I go deeper, I'll find that there's something quite big that I'm feeling.
I think it was the first time that I'd felt like I was on holiday since all this COVID stuff had started, because we'd left Auckland for the first time.
It built up and all the...
And I sort of it lasted from pretty much midday to when I went to bed. And I just went, you know, push through. And my thing is always, don't, if you're in a craving like that, I can't phrase it like, look, I'd never drink, so I can't have that drink. I just phrase it to, look, okay, let's look at this tomorrow.
Yeah,
and assess the craving then. Okay, let's just hold it off. You've got this far.
Yep.
Okay, there's the option of having a beer tomorrow.
Yeah.
And there'll be the option of having it the day after, but let's just get through today.
Yes.
And then, of course, I woke up in the morning and it was just, wow, that was really weird yesterday. And then it had gone.
Oh wonderful. And did you have a great holiday?
Yeah, it had a great holiday. And then, of course, during the afternoon where I had the cravings, I sort of did use tools out of this sort of sober toolbox of playing it forward and like going, okay, so I'm going to wake up early in the morning. My son's going to want to go for a swim straight away because this has got a really cool pool.
Yeah.
How am I going to feel? I'm going to be hungover in a thermal pool. That's going to feel appalling.
Yeah.
So it was doing
not
all
to
that.
Not to mention the guilt and the anxiety and all of it. I mean, that's the thing. Playing it forward is such a good tool. We talk about that quite a lot on the site, because that twinkly promise of that first drink is so often not the reality, especially for those of us who were in that dark place with it. I just know where it would take me pretty quickly. But, hey, before we sort of wrap up, you know, we know that there's still a lot of shame and stigma around crazily admitting that you get addicted to this addictive drug. And you're a guy with a public profile. I mean, and most Kiwis would know who you are. How much of a big decision was it for you to be so open about your reality?
It was quite a lot, because where the area I work in, I've always been associated back in the day, when I sort of first got on TV and my live stuff, of being a boozy comic and sort of being in that more hectic environment and even so forth. I work for Radio Hauraki and the ACC, where we're doing a lot of stuff that is, they have a lot of alcohol sponsors and so forth, but there's a couple of us who don't drink and proudly don't drink. And it was hard, but then it was coming back to the fact of going, there's one universe and it's your universe. So what, you're the only one who sees the world and I'm the only one who sees my universe. So I may as well enjoy it. I can't control what happens to me, but I can control whether I suffer from it. So I was like, stuff it. I chose not to drink. I'm going to own this. It's not my job to stop people drinking, but I feel it is my job to support anyone who is struggling or just wanting to chat. And I've often have DMs on Twitter or Instagram with people who would see, like, I did a chatted about it on the project, and then a few people messaged, and they were just young guys who were like 19, 20, who were like, hey man, it was really cool seeing someone who I respect talk about it. I'm struggling. I'm in Dunedin and a uni.
Yeah, right.
You know, which is like horrendous, let alone trying to get to grips with your own masculinity and who you are and all this sort of carry on.
Oh no, having your voice added to the space. I mean, I have been overjoyed and delighted, for what it's worth, because you are a cool guy. I mean, you are a comedian, you're a TV host, you know, and you're a dude, and you're younger. I mean, I'm a middle-aged housewife. I mean, you know, no disrespect to me, but I am 50-year-old suburban mum. And so having someone like you, and I've seen your I follow you on Twitter, and sometimes you'll just write a tweet, which is, what did you write? I tried to go back and look before we did this, but Twitter wouldn't let me. And you'd written something that really normalized emotional robustness. You just said something like, if it's really that hard, is alcohol going to help, or something? And I'm just like, this is a gift, because having those conversations, this is the real shit, man. The truth of it. This is our life. This is our one life. And so many people are boozing and numbing and not just doing this seems simple thing of just facing up to and feeling what we feel. And also, so having your voice is just,
oh, thank you. I wanted to say that to people who are giving up, the cards are stacked against you a bit. Like, if there's so many conspiracy theories going on in the world at the moment, but one that is actually true is alcohol lobbies. And New Zealand has a huge alcohol lobby, and they don't want you to stop drinking. So they're going to make billboards that look, a lot of people listening to this will be early sober, so they will realize when you're driving around, shit, they're everywhere. And they want you to keep drinking, and they don't want, it's a rebellion. It is a punk rock thing to do is to not drink, because you're just lining the pockets of big companies, and that's poisoning you. And it dulls down society, and it dulls down you. And I honestly believe that no matter where you are in your journey and how hard it is at the moment, that you're just a seed at the moment that can flower into something awesome. And everyone I know who has given up booze, and once they have really worked their way through that early stage, they breathe out. I feel so much lighter. The fact that it has just melted away an attention in my relationship with my wife. We love each other more than anything, but there was always this tension that wasn't us. It was bloody alcohol. So kick that to the curb. We communicate better. It's just, and as I said, I've had it harder physically since I've given up booze, but I'm happier and I feel healthier than I ever have in my life. So do it. Keep going.
Well, what a note to end on. Di Henwood, you are a gift, and we love your work on the telly, Dancing with the Stars, also very popular. I'm a huge reality TV girl, so I watch
it. Oh, hey, look out for Lego Masters. It's coming out shortly. I think sort of late April, early May.
Sweet. Well, I'll make sure this goes up before then, but really, really grateful to you for coming on our little old website and sharing your story, and just, you know, also for sharing it more widely, because it makes a difference. We are disruptors. We are slowly chipping away at this culture of drinking, which has bedded itself in. It is going to move. It's going to be a big job, but every one of us that adds our little bit worth, it's like adding bricks and Lego. You see, there we go. It's like we're building the ultimate Lego creation. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
See you. See you.